Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka again. Today's offering, another essay from Sri Aurobindo's Essays, Divine and Human. I'm going to give the first half because it's rather long. So today we'll have the first half and next week the remainder. It's called Sat, S-A-T, which is Sanskrit for truth. What is truth? Said Pilate, confronted with a mighty messenger of the truth, not jesting surely, not in a spirit of shallow lightness, but turning away from the Christ, with the impatience of the disillusioned soul for those who still use high words that have lost their meaning, and believe in great ideals which the test of the event has proved to be fallacious. What is truth? This phantom so long pursued, so impossible to grasp firmly, that a man young, beautiful, gifted, eloquent, and admired should consent to be crucified for its sake. Have not circumstance and event justified the half-pitying, half-sorrowful question of the Roman governor? That messenger suffered on the cross. And what happened to the truth that was his message? As Christ himself foresaw, it has never been understood, even by its professors. For 500 years, it was a glorious mirage for which thousands of men and women willingly underwent imprisonment, torture, and death in order that Christ's kingdom might come on earth. And felicity possess the nations. But the kingdom that came was not Christ's. It was Constantine's, it was Hildebrand's, it was Alexander Borgia's. For another 13 centuries, the message was, what? Has it not been the chief support of fanaticism, falsehood, cruelty and hypocrisy, the purveyor of selfish power, the keystone of a society that was everything Christ had denounced? Jesus died on the cross for the benefit, it would seem, of those who united to slay him. The Sadducee, atheist, high priest, the Pharisee, the zealot, the hypocrite and persecutor, and the brutal, self-seeking, callous military Roman. Now in its last state, after such a lamentable career, Christ's truth stands finally rejected by the world's recent enlightenment as a hallucination or superstition, which sometimes helpfully, sometimes harmfully, amused the infancy of the human intellect. This history is written in two pronounced characters to be the exact type of all messages that the world has received. But is not, in some sort, a type of the fate of all truth? What idea has stood successfully the test of a prolonged and pitiless inquiry? What ideal has stood successfully the test of time? Has not mankind been busy for the last 50 years and more, denying almost all that it had formerly affirmed? And now that under the name of rationalism or materialism, the denial has shaped itself into some form of workably practical affirmation, mankind is again at its work of denying its denial and rearranging, but this time doubtingly, its old affirmations. The skepticism of Pilate would therefore seem to have some excuse in a recurrent human experience. Is there indeed such a thing as truth? Beyond, of course, that practical truth of persistent material appearances by which we govern our lives. The truth of death, birth, hunger, sexuality, pain, pleasure, commerce, money-making, ease, discomfort, ambition, failure, and success. Has not indeed the loftiest of our philosophical systems declared all things here to be Maya? And, if Maya is illusion, a deceit of the thinking consciousness, then indeed there can be no truth anywhere in the world, except that indefinable existence which we cannot comprehend and which, after all, Buddhism denies. For not without logic and plausibility, setting it down as another and more generalized sanskara, a false sensation of consciousness in the eternal void. And yet, man is so constituted that he must follow after truth, whether it is attained or not. Something in him, secret, masterful, essential to his existence, forbids him to be satisfied with a falsehood. The moment it is perceived or even believed to be a falsehood, he rejects it, and the thing begins to crumble. If he persists in his rejection, it cannot last. Yesterday it was, today we see it tottering, tomorrow we shall look for it and find that it is no longer. It has passed back into Prakriti. It is dissolved into that of which it was made. For Shraddha is the condition of all existence in consciousness, and that to which Shraddha is denied ceases to have existence, whether here or elsewhere. It is not, neither in this world nor in another. We may not unreasonably infer from this importance and this imperative necessity that truth really does exist and that everything is not illusion. If then truth is always escaping our hold and leaving us to disillusionment and derision, it may be because we have neither formed any clear conception of what truth itself is, nor taken hold of the right means by which it can be grasped. Let us leave aside, for a moment, Buddha's world of sanskaras. Let us put aside, packed away in an accessible corner of the brain, Shankara's gospel of Maya, illusion, and start instead from the old Vedantic beginnings. Om Tat Sat, that, Brahman, is the thing that is. And Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, verily all this, everything of which we are aware, is in fact Brahman. It is at least possible that we may return from this inquiry with a deeper idea, both of sanskaras and of Maya, and may find that we have answered Pilate's question by discovering the nature and conditions of truth. Now, I am speaking of the fundamental truth, the truth of things, and not merely the fact about particulars or of particulars only, as their knowledge forms a basis or a help to the discovery of fundamental truth. The fact that a particular sort of contact makes me uncomfortable is nothing in itself, except insofar as it throws light upon the general causes of pain. The nature, the origin, and purpose of pain is the fundamental truth that I seek about the sensational reaction to contact. This law of pain, moreover, is not so fundamental as the truth about the nature, origin, and purpose of sensation and contact themselves, of which pain is a particularly an example or a modification. This more fundamental truth becomes again itself particular when compared with the truth about the nature, origin, and purpose of existence, of which sensation and contact are only particular circumstances. In this, we arrive at the one fundamental truth of all, and a little consideration will show that if we really and rightly know that, the rest ought, and probably will, reveal themselves at once and fall into their rightful places. That, the divine Brahman, being known, all is known. Our ancestors perceived this truth of the fundamental unity of knowledge and sought to know Sat first, confident that Sat being known, the different laws, details, and particulars of truth would more readily yield up their secret. The moderns follow another thought which also has a truth of its own. They think that since being is one, the knowledge of the particulars must lead to the knowledge of the fundamental unity. And they begin, therefore, at the bottom and climb upwards. A slow but, one might imagine, safe method of procession. "Little flower in the crannies," cries Tennyson, addressing a pretty blossom in the wall in lines which make good thought, but execrable poetry. "If I could but know what you are, little flower, I should know what God and man is." Undoubtedly, the question is whether, without knowing God, we can really know the flower. Know it, not merely its name and form, or all the details of its name and form. Form, rupa, we can know and analyze by the aid of science. Nama, by the aid of philosophy. But swarupa, true form, it would seem that some third instrument is needed for that consummation of knowledge. The senses and reason, even though aided by microscope and telescope, cannot show it to us. The form of that stands not in the ken of sight. Mind and speech are not permitted to lead us to it. Even the metaphysical logic of a Shankara stops short of that final victory. Realization in thought is not to be obtained by logic. All these various disabilities are due to one compelling cause. They are because Sat, the truth of existence, Brahman, the reality of things, which fills and supports their idea and form, is beyond the recognizable and analyzable elements of idea and form. It is subtler even than elemental subtlety, and therefore not to be deduced, induced, inferred, or discovered by a reasoning which proceeds from a consideration of the elements of name and form and makes that its standard. This is a truth which even the greatest philosophers, Vedantic or unVedantic, are apt to forget. But the Shruti insists on it, always. I'm stopping here for today. The second half of Sat will be continued in the next episode. Marlanka signing off. Thank you so much for listening.